The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
America,
ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Guy James Show. Good to have all of you along with us this afternoon. Coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of Southwest Florida. Yes, it is beautiful. The weather's nice. It's warm. The Gulf waters are about 80 degrees right now, so very nice this time of year. Just getting ready to have summer visited upon us, and that's when it gets a little warm. But nonetheless, all four seasons very nice here in Southwest Florida. I hope it's nice where you're at today, no matter where you are. We've got a good show for you today. We've got a great interview coming up today. An interview with Jim Arcatus. He's from the Progressive Policy Institute, and he's going to be talking about the torture issue today. I guess what he doesn't know about it probably isn't worth talking about. Jim is an interesting guy. He's the director for the PPI's National Security Project, and he was a counterterrorism and security analyst for 5 years at the Navy Criminal Investigative Service, specializing in Europe and North Africa and Middle East, and he speaks several languages and all that. He's a very interesting guy, and he knows all about this terrorism situation. So we'll be talking about that coming up, I think, at 3:30 with Jim. Quite an engaging fellow. I had a conversation with him on the phone today, and we're very glad to have him along with us. I do want to let everybody know once again that Bob and I are going to be attending Bob Kincaid, the one and only Beckley, West Virginia Bob Kincaid. Oh, there might be another Bob Kincaid in Beckley, but I doubt it. Not like this one, anyway. Bob and I are going to be attending the OurFuture.org convention June 1st through the 3rd, and we'll each do our shows from there and probably visit back and forth on each other's shows. That is, if he'll have me. I'll have him over, so we'll see. And it's going to be at the Omni Shoreham Hotel, and we're both very much looking forward to it. It's a great event, and I think this will be my, maybe fifth time. And it's always a good time, always great guests. Candy Stroud and Ellen Ratner will be there to provide guests for us, and looking forward to it very, very much. Had several items. Hey, did you see, as an aside here, did you see the Janet Karpinski segment on Keith Olbermann's show last night? I saw a tape of it. My word, the woman was loaded and ready to go. She was really pissed, and you could tell she was anxious to get her story out about Abu Ghraib prison, where she was the, I guess you'd call her the commandant there for a while. And she was just livid to get the story out. And it was a good interview, very good interview. The tape of it's on the internet, so you'll be able to see it there. Tape, video, whatever. And leftovers from the teabaggers last week. I couldn't resist this. The queen of the local neocon gas bags, this Mandy Connell from the local radio station, is still bragging about it. I wonder if she knows what teabagging really is. I do wonder. She's quite a piece of work, this Mandy Connell. Anyway, so in the local newspapers here, in the letters to the editor, I just wanted to read you some. They did allow some liberal folks to write some things to the letter to the editor and put it in. And I was really surprised in regard to this teabagging party that they had down at the local river here, down at the Caloosahatchee River. Beautiful river, by the way. Anyway, I got three of these here, and I'd like to read them to you. They're from the local letters to the editor in the Fort Myers News Press newspaper. The title of this one says, "Protest Amusing. It's not too hard to see what the real truth is behind these tea parties. It's kind of amusing if you think about it. For years, the right wing had to listen to the liberals and the liberal media dish and deride their boy Bush and organize protests against the war in Iraq. So now it's their turn to get even by protesting taxes and the so-called socialism. It doesn't matter that taxes have always been around. You think they were something new that Obama invented, or they want you to believe that he raised everybody's taxes, when in fact he's cut taxes for the middle class. But then, maybe all the people at the tea parties make over $250,000 a year." Mm-hmm. "The right wing doesn't have anything else to protest. They can't protest the war. Their leaders are out, and they're so full of wrath and vengeance that they just want to bring the other guy down." That's Vic from North Fort Myers. Vic, way to go. "Right wing naysayers," this other one is entitled. "The black first family in the White House is not only historic, but is the most charming, wholesome of White House personalities that we've had in a long, long time. And yet the GOP has no, nada, positive remarks about this remarkable change for our nation. They don't even like Bo, the new White House pooch," as it was a gift from Mr. and Mrs. Senator Ted Kennedy, those terrible left-wing liberals. "I, for one, am a bit sad for the GOP and all the talking heads at Fox News. Hannity starts its shows with the pundits and failures from the GOP along with weak, lame proxies of the left, and literally blows them away over and over, sort of like Cheney with a loaded gun. And on the economy, Wells Fargo and other firms want to give the TARP money back. Why? Because a renewed consumer confidence is having a positive effect. And yes, it's better for our system than they do it, as did Chrysler decades ago." I don't really understand that one. "So blather on, all you windbag naysayers of right-wing propaganda. Fewer and lesser minds even pay attention as Fox pulls out all the stunts it can to obstruct the facts or speak the truth. Nobody really cares. Have a nice tea party, folks." That's from Jimmy from Tice, which is a suburb of Fort Myers. And just one here, and one more. "Get perspective. I watched with interest the people that gathered at the Centennial Park to show their concern about big government spending by using tea bags, which represent the historical Boston Tea Party. I'm concerned about big government spending as well, so I checked out our national debt. See, it does pay to get facts." This letter goes on to say, "It seems that when Jimmy Carter left office in 1980, our national debt was $650 billion. Then Reagan took office, then Bush Sr. held office, and after both of their 12 years, our national debt ballooned to $4.5 trillion. Why no tea bags then? Next, with President Clinton, we enjoyed 8 years of peace and prosperity. Next, George W. Bush took office and led us into war and an economic depression, causing our national debt to rise to over $10 trillion. Why no tea bags then? So now President Obama is attempting to get us out of this economic depression by requesting $800 billion for bailouts that the previous administration and Congress put into motion. Now we need a teabag party to show our concern. I wonder how many of these so-called teabaggers drive foreign cars. And that one's from Alfred from Estero. So, gosh, the local paper allowing some liberal points of view in the letters to the editor. Interesting. As long as I'm getting things off my chest here today. Somebody sent me a note that Elizabeth Hasselbeck from, what's that show, Barbara Walwal's show, The View, the women, Whoopi Goldberg and some others, and they've got this woman, this blonde, this Elizabeth Hasselbeck of Survivor fame. I'm told that Elizabeth Hasselbeck is the newly crowned princess of the right wing and close pal of Sarah Palin. I'm told she's in Florida today promoting the new line of clothing that she's endorsing. Here's what I want to know. And maybe one of you can answer this for me. I understand from the marketer's side. I understand them using these people to sell their products. But from a consumer side, why would anyone buy anything that's endorsed by a celebrity? Why would you do that? I don't really get that. What does it mean that a celebrity endorses a product? It means they're getting paid to do so. It doesn't mean the product is any better than anyone else's. It certainly doesn't mean that. In fact, it might mean even that it's worse, because a twit like Elizabeth Hasselbeck or Martha Stewart or Elizabeth Taylor promotes it, people run out and buy it. I mean, somebody help me understand this. Actually, if you want to know my position on this, I go out of my way to never, never knowingly buy any product that a celebrity has endorsed. Man, our society's stupid, aren't we? Well, thought we had a call on the line there. I guess not. Anyway, if that's you calling, call back, whoever it may be. 866-546-5254. We will pause at the bottom of the hour to have our guest again. Once again, Jim Arcatus from the Progressive Policy Institute. He also has a blog, a really good blog down it. It's called allourmight.com. Allourmight.com. You might want to check that out. And, I found an interesting audio clip that I thought you ought to hear. Maybe you haven't heard this. All this, these gun nuts and militia people and all that. Here's an audio clip that was put up on OhioMilitia.com. That's OhioMilitia.com. It's been pulled. I guess somebody, with an ounce of sense in that organization, decided it wasn't such a good idea to have this up. But let's play this clip from the OhioMilitia.com.
Hello everyone, this is Pale Horse again from the Ohio Militia. Basically, I'm here today. I'm sick of seeing nothing be done. Everyone talks, complains, whines, but yet here we are. Things are still going the same way. We need to do something. We need to make a dent, okay? So here's my idea. We have a 1 million-man armed militiaman march on Washington. A peaceful demonstration of at least 1 million. Hey, if we can get 10 million, even better. But at least 1 million armed militiamen marching on Washington. A peaceful demonstration, no shooting, no one gets hurt. Just a demonstration. The only difference from any typical demonstration is we will all be armed. Okay? Legal weapons, no felons, just regular militia men and women, citizens, civilians of the United States of America, 1 million man march on Washington. Who's with me?
That's from OhioMilitia.com. They've yanked that down, but that guy supposedly was the president of that organization that put that up. Can you imagine a million of these militia type descending upon Washington, D.C. with guns? Can you imagine? First of all, can you imagine trying to get a permit for that in Washington, D.C.? They don't, I think they've got a rule against handguns in Washington. You can't sell handguns in Washington, D.C., and I think you have to have a permit to carry one, and I don't think a million people would get a permit. I may be talking off the top of my head here, but I don't think I don't think a million guys would get into Washington, D.C. With guns, do you? That is really something. That is really something that somebody would even suggest something like that. Oh, well. And other trivia taking place today. Somebody keeps trying to call. I think we have the phones all set and all. They must hang up after one ring. I don't know. People have been talking about the housing market getting better. And I had a great example last night of why it's not doing so well. Not 200 yards from where I'm sitting right now, there's a condo being sold. The sale is starting in just a few minutes. An absolute auction. An absolute auction. It was brand new 2.5 years ago. Sold for $339,000. $339,000 2.5 years ago. The guy doing the selling for the thing today says it's going to sell for somewhere around $65,000. And this is an absolute auction. If I had that kind of money, I think I'd be down there bidding on that. It's hard to imagine. It really is. $339,000 2.5 years ago, and they think it'll go for about $65,000 today. An absolute auction. Wow. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to join the program. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
At 8 o'clock at night, you just come in the door and take the first turn to the right. Be careful when you get there. We hate to be bereft, but we're taking down the names of everybody turning left.
Oh, we're the John Birch Society, the John Birch Society. Here to save our country from a communistic plot. Join the John Birch Society. Help us fill the ranks. We'll get this movement started. We need lots of tools and cranks.
Now there's no one that we're certain the Kremlin doesn't touch.
We think that Westbrook Pegler doth protest a bit too much. We only hail the hero from whom we got our name.
We're not sure what he did,
but he's our hero just the same. Oh, we're the John Birch Society, the John Birch Society.
Socialism is the ism dismalest of all.
Join the John Birch Society, there's so much to do. Have you heard they're serving vodka at the WCTU?
Well, you've heard about the agents that we've already named. Well, NCA has agents that are flatly unashamed.
We're after Rosie Clooney.
We've gotten Pinky Lee.
And the day we get Red Gum, won't that be a victory?
Oh, we're the John Birch Society, the John Birch Society. Norman Vincent Peale may think he's beating us along, but the John Birch Society knows he's still the beans.
He keeps on preaching brotherhood, but we know what he means. We'll teach you how to spot him.
in the cities or the slits. Or even Jasper Junction is just full of Bolsheviks.
The CIA subversive!
And so is the FCC.
There's no one left but thee and we.
And we're not sure of thee.
We're the John Birch Society. The John Birch Society is here to save our country from a communistic plot. Join the John Birch Society. Holding off the Reds. We'll use our hands and hearts. And if we must, we'll use our heads.
Do you want Justice Warren to be your commissar? Do you want Mrs. Khrushchev in there with a D.A.R.? You cannot trust your neighbors or even next of kin.
If mommy is a commie, then you gotta turn her in.
Oh, we're the John Birch Society, the John Birch Society, fighting for the right to fight the right, fight for the right. Join the John Birch Society as we're marching on. We'll all be glad to see you when we're meeting in the dark, in the dark, in the John Birch Society.
Oh, that song's a little bit outdated. But still appropriate. That's a lot of fun. I remember well way back when that was going on, all of that, when the John Birch Society was just a terror here in this country. Hey, I see our good friend in the up east does it again. Holy Joe Lieberman. First this week, he was asked the question, first of all, is waterboarding torture? And Lieberman, let me quote him. Lieberman said, well, I take a minority position on this. Most people think it's definitely torture. The truth is, it has mostly a psychological impact on people. It's a terrible thing to do. And I want the President of the United States in a given circumstances where we believe somebody we've got in our control may have information that could help us stop an attack, an imminent attack. We ought to be able to use something like waterboarding. But a little later on in the week, when Holy Joe finds out that the heat's on about this whole situation and people are starting to listen up and take it seriously, then he signs a note that's coming from Lindsey Graham and John McCain and Joe Lieberman. What is it about that? Those three, this Republican rat pack? The note says, we disagree, however, with administration statements suggesting that the lawyers who provided such counsel may now be open to prosecution. Some of the legal analysis included in the OLC memos released last week was, we believe, deeply flawed. We have also strongly opposed the overly coercive interrogation and techniques, including waterboarding. So, at the beginning of the week, Holy Joe Lieberman is... well, if we have to do waterboarding, we have to do it. But as the week goes by and Joe sees that his position isn't all that popular, Joe signs a note along with his pal Lindsey and John McCain saying, no, we oppose this sort of thing. Could Holy Joe Lieberman possibly speak out of both sides of his mouth any more than that? I really have to wonder what's wrong with people up there that elect that guy. I really do. I wonder about that. I really think the ball's rolling too fast to stop this now. I believe that President Obama thought he had it stopped when he said he wasn't going to pursue it. But again, like Joe Lieberman, I think President Obama felt the heat coming from people of his own party and Americans in general and decided to maybe just flip the ball over to his attorney general. We find out that Condoleezza Rice and John Ashcroft and at least 10 other Bush officials were in on this and approved it. Let's take a call here. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello? Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, it's Kevin.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi.
Yeah, you know what? I like to see all 50 of these guys march in Washington. And I'm willing to bet you any amount of money Fox News is going to hire Industrial Light and Magic to replicate them so it'll look like a million.
Yeah, I think you're right. They're talking about that they had a million attend those things last weekend, and of course we know that that's not true. But yeah, I think you're right. That would be the case.
Yeah, you know, and I'm writing an article. Maybe we should allow secession from the union.
Oh, I'll allow it if I get my way. I'll tell some of these boys to take a hike.
Yeah, you know, it's becoming more and more prevalent that obviously the Civil War wasn't settled at Appomattox Courthouse.
No,
it's
not.
And you know, I'm writing it in such a detail where it can work out on a peaceful manner. You go.
Yeah, we'll. You know, that Governor Perry
down
there, and
it wouldn't. Besides Texas going, I'll allow Oklahoma, Louisiana, New Mexico. Hell, I'll even cut off a piece of California so they'll have access to the Pacific Coast.
Yeah.
Make it extremely generous.
Now, I want them to have to go down through Mexico to get to the coast. Through Mexico.
Oh, yeah.
Cross the border and have the Mexicans.
See, I say call their bluff and let them secede from the Union.
Yeah.
Because a little bit of tidbit, Red State America forgets is that after the Civil War, most Confederate states were begging to come back into the Union.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right. Exactly right.
They were practically begging on their knees.
But there are places where, even today, you find pockets where people are still living in Civil War days as far as their politics are concerned and how their association with the United States. There are people in the South that still put the Confederate flag above the American flag.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's all designed to keep certain two antiquated status quos in line. Plain and simple.
Yeah, and what's that old thing? American by birth, Confederate by choice, or whatever. I maybe got it backwards. I don't know. But I'd be willing to let them go.
They're more trouble than they're worth because they just are. They really are.
I agree.
This wasn't declared out of Washington, D.C. Houston declared this war.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I thought they had one dolt of a governor down there, but they went and elected another one as well. Perry's every bit as poor of a governor as was George W. Bush. Hey, Kevin, I got to run. We got to get our guest on coming up. He'll be calling in any second now. Thanks for the call.
Okay.
Good to hear from you.
Okay, have a good one.
Yeah, bye now.
Okay.
We are going to take a break right now and get our guest on the line. And we'll be back in just, a couple of minutes here, I think. Once I find out where the music went. I tell you, that's one of those things. Here we go. We'll be right back.
Of today singing out like your name. You said I'm crazy. If I am, I'm crazy for you. Sometimes sitting in the dark wishing you were here turns me crazy. But it's true, makes me lose my every time I'm meant to be acting sensible, you drift into my head and turn me into a crumbling fool. Tell me to run and I'll race. If you want me to stop, I'll freeze. And if you want me gonna leave, just hold me closer, baby. Make me crazy for you.
easy for you. Lately with this state I'm in, I can't help myself but spin. I wish you'd come over, send me spinning closer to you. My, oh my, how my blood boils, a sweet taste for you. Strips me down bare and gets me into my favorite mood. I keep on trying, fighting these feelings away. But the more I do, the crazier. Pacing floors, opening doors, hoping he'll walk through and save me, boy. Because I'm too
again. All right. Let's see where we go with this now. The phone says we're calling. But we're not calling. Oh, man. Says we're calling. Hello, hello. Hello, hello. Hello, hello. Sorry about this. Having troubles with this phone thing again. I'll be back in just a moment.
Wondering if I
Show. You're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, it's Eric Hayden.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
Good.
I guess we've gotten past our phone problem here. Thank you so much for calling in.
No problem.
To our listening audience, as promised, we have Jim Marcatus with us right now. Well, Jim, rather than me have you give your background, why don't you tell us about your background and why you're qualified to talk about this subject today?
Well, right now I direct the National Security Project at the Progressive Policy Institute, which I've done for about the last 2 years, and we cover a wide variety of national security-related topics from, you know, everything from defense spending to torture. Just prior to this, for about 5 years, between 2002 and 2007, I was a counterterrorism analyst with the Department of the Navy.
Well, then you know a little more than the average guy about terrorism and what goes on behind the scenes and all, and you have some good contacts.
True, I like to think so.
Yeah, you definitely have some good contacts. I've read a lot of your work. Jim, my concern about this terrorism issue, it appears to have legs now, and it appears it's not going to go away for a day or so. I thought it might. My biggest concern is that I don't think we're this kind of a nation. I'm concerned that the rest of the world is probably looking at us now a little differently than they did, and that's a huge concern to me. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think that this really cuts to the heart of the matter of what this debate is all about. We're looking at a situation where America was founded on a set of ideals. You know, in the Declaration of Independence, it says all men are created equal, and, you know, we are bound with certain unalienable rights by our Creator. The Eighth Amendment of the Constitution talks about not using cruel and unusual punishment. These are the very foundations of who we are as a society, and I think the very important correlation to terrorism is that we have to continue to espouse to be as perfect as we can, no matter what the circumstances are. We cannot choose as a nation to take the easy way out just because we think it might give us a tidbit or two of information, even if lives are at stake, because this is another discussion we can have, but terrorism does not produce, on the whole, I found through my experience, intelligence of broadly higher quality, of higher quality at all. And I think getting back to the moral values and the bedrock aspect of American society, this is really where this debate should lie. Because where we are now is talking about when we torture, when we choose to lay our hand and inflict pain on our captives, we betray some of those very values that make America America. It makes the country what it is. It makes us special, American exceptionalism, and everything that goes along with that. When we choose to betray those values, I think we are stooping down to their level, and we are becoming a little less American. We are losing sight of who we are as a country. Now, terrorism's goal, it's very easy to say that terrorism's goal is to try and kill people, to try and kill thousands of Americans. I view that as more of a means to an end, because if you take, I believe, the United Nations definition of terrorism, it is to alter behavior of the targeted population.
Yes.
It is to exact political prices and change political behaviors. And essentially that's, we're letting the terrorists win by torturing, because we are changing our behavior in a way that they approve of.
Yeah, they're not after to kill. Of course, they'd like to kill some of us. There's no doubt about that. But they know full well, and we know full well, they could never kill a really huge number of Americans. Not that 3,000 isn't huge, but basically, what they're after is to rip apart this country, to take the fabric of this country and just rip it apart. That's really what they're after. That's their goal.
Yeah, and every time we choose to torture, we move a little bit closer in that direction, because we're engaging in activities that are inherently un-American.
Well, Jim, coming at it from, let me be the devil's advocate here, and the real devil, let me come at it from a Dick Cheney point of view. Yeah, it's all well and good what you said about being not torturing, you know, American citizens and all, but the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence and things that you mentioned, that was for American citizens. We're not talking about American citizens here that are being tortured.
No, well, you're absolutely right. This is not a specific legal standard that I'm using. I'm talking about the spirit of the country. I'm not talking about, well, you can sort of look at one body of laws or one legal precedent or anything. By applying the, you know, it says all men are created equal. It doesn't say all men except terrorists who don't happen to be American citizens. You know, just because we chose to found our country in one specific place in one specific time doesn't mean that we value life, liberty, or the pursuit of happiness. If we want to, you know, get on the real sort of patriotic founding documents role, it doesn't necessarily mean that we meant to only apply that to the people living within the borders of the country. You know, and so we're talking about the spirit of what the country embodies. We're not talking about a narrow legal definition of who happens to be American and who doesn't.
We're going to hear a lot of definitions coming up in the coming months of
sure.
From back and forth on both sides. You mentioned that you touched on something earlier that I've read a lot about, and I know you know a lot about and have contacts that do. Does torture really work? I think we've heard from experts. We've heard from the FBI. That really we haven't gotten any really significant intelligence out of these torture acts that we've done. Does torture really work? I don't think it does.
Well, there's a great op-ed today that probably says it a lot better than I could, because it also deals with an individual who worked for the FBI and was an interrogator. So look in the New York Times today. There's a piece by Ali Soufan, who is a supervisory special agent for the FBI, that talks exactly about why torture is not terribly effective. From my own experience, I can tell you that torture does make people talk. Of course it makes people talk. It makes people provide information. However, the issue becomes, what is the quality of that information that we're getting? And is that information attainable using non-torture techniques? And I think the answer to those last two questions is yes, we can definitely obtain similar information by not torturing, and that the information we get when we torture is of dubious credibility. A lot of conservatives have pointed to this alleged plot in Los Angeles that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the 9/11 mastermind, started talking about. And he said that, you know, he knew of the second wave of attacks that was going to occur, and it was going to target the Liberty Tower in L.A. Now, there has been, George Bush first mentioned this in February 2006 speech when he wanted to justify the wiretapping and say, look, you know, we've gained intelligence that has, saved American lives. There is wide-ranging debate, certainly while I was there in the intelligence community, and I assume that there remains so today, on whether that plot actually had much credibility and viability to it. Because when you torture someone, like Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, you waterboard him, he just starts spouting off about every little thing he knows or may have heard of, right? And so this particular plot in Los Angeles could have been two guys having a conversation somewhere. They weren't particularly intent on doing it, nor were they capable. And terrorism is the marriage of intent and capability. And if you don't have those two aspects, it's very difficult to evaluate the credibility of a plot. Or if you don't have those two aspects, the chances are the plot is not credible. So when, you know, just because Khalid Sheikh Mohammed said it doesn't mean it's necessarily 100% true.
Exactly. And I think some of the media figures have pointed out that the 2005 Justice Department memo that claims that the use of waterboarding on Khalid Sheikh Mohammed caused him to give up this information and thus foil this plot against this library tower in Los Angeles. According to the Bush administration timeline, that plot was broken up more than a year before they even captured Sheikh Mohammed. So there's something wrong with the timeline there someplace.
Well, yeah, also look at the date when that memo was put out. I believe it was May of 2005. You know, that is the heat of when these discussions about the legality of torture were really starting to gain ground internally within the administration. And so, I'm not privy to the drafting of that particular memo, so I don't want to, you know, tell stories out of school and make it look like I was there in the room when it was being written or anything. But you have to wonder if there's more credence given to the evidence that memo contains because they were getting ready for a fight. You know, they wanted to show that the interrogation methods that they were using during that time we're producing actionable intelligence. And so there may have been a little bit of fudging and a little bit of, you know, exaggeration to tie some direct and actionable intelligence to interrogation techniques. The fact of the matter is it is extraordinarily difficult to tie, you know, specific sentence, specific piece of actionable intelligence to a specific technique or time when that person was tortured. You know, you're engaging in a lot of hearsay and speculation that you can't ever really prove. So it becomes a very slippery slope to the point where a lot of things can be alleged, and you'll frankly never know what – you'll never be able to get down to the real nitty-gritty of who said what, where, and why, and how this story really played out.
Well, where do you see this going? Should there be a special prosecutor appointed? Are there real violations of the law here, technically? Is there some place to go with this?
You know, this is a very difficult question. I think for starters, particularly for progressives, because I hesitate to get the political angle of this confused with the legal angle of it. So, for starters, I think it's very important that we support President Obama's opinion to not prosecute anyone who is using this legal guidance to engage in these techniques, because it's like saying you're giving non-lawyers, guys who work for the CIA, who are trying to execute their duty, who received this legal protection and thought that they were operating within the boundaries of the law at the time. So for starters, you know, that is automatically off, and I think that Obama has made the right decision in order to further that.
Shouldn't you know as a human being that that's wrong? Shouldn't you know that slamming people up against the wall is wrong and hanging them from the ceiling? Shouldn't you know that's wrong?
Ideally, yeah. Of course you should. But, you know, it is, Director of National Intelligence Blair said the other day, it is very easy to look back 7 or 8 years on these acts and see the issue very clearly. And I'm not trying to make excuses for anyone, but I'm just trying to add to the context of the discussion that way back in the day, right in the fog of post-September 11th world, some of these guys probably thought that they were just trying to do their duty to their country. And they had essentially a get-out-of-jail-free card from the Justice Department that said, go ahead and do this. You know, you're trying to protect the country. And so you can see that in a small number of cases how it might not have been as clear as that as it is, as DNI Blair said, looking back on a sunny day in April 2009. Now, the issue becomes, in the larger context, what do you do about the people who wrote these things to begin with? I tend to believe that that's what we have elections for. I do tend to side with Obama's pronouncement that let's acknowledge this chapter in American history. Let's publicly debate it and realize that it was wrong and that these acts were inherently un-American. But these guys suffered because we voted them out of office. And I would prefer that we spend a lot of our time worrying about how are we going to define the rules of the game and make sure something this terrible never happens again. Rather than, you know, you can have special commissions, you can have commissions in the Senate and that sort of thing. And it is certainly well worth the time and effort to discuss and discover who knew what, when, where, and why. That should all be aired in the public, and that should all be viewed and discussed. Whether or not we should prosecute those individuals is another question altogether that I'm not fully convinced of at this point.
Why aren't you convinced of it? I feel like I am convinced of it. I know everybody's saying, well, we need to look ahead. But
yeah, well,
I don't know how we can look ahead and knowing that this might happen again and we might have another Dick Cheney or Donald Rumsfeld or Bybee or somebody like that in the future that commits another act like this, knowing damn well that nothing's going to happen to them. They won't be accountable.
Well, I think that there are recriminations for it. The most obvious one is that we had an election and these guys got trounced. And we knew the place America was marching was not somewhere that they had been or wanted to take us. It's above and beyond that. I tend to think that the intelligence community is a very tricky business and a lot of these guys were just trying to, you know, do their jobs under difficult circumstances. I think maybe in where these laws got interpreted, it's a question of interpreting the law as opposed, interpreting the law badly, interpreting it stupidly, interpreting it in a way that, you know, I personally believe is inherently un-American and goes against everything that we stand for, yet it is interpreting the law. It's a better question whether they were actually breaking the law. I know that they were breaking the spirit of the law, but where we come down on the letter, which is a prosecutable offense, is something that's different. And if these guys, if we move ahead with the prosecution of the people that interpreted the law badly and stupidly and everything that I said, I think that it would be very difficult to actually prosecute them.
Hmm. Well, I'm on the side of actually prosecuting the people and make it impossible or unlikely that the same thing's going to happen in the future. We have laws to keep people from committing crimes, and I just think that politicians involved in something like this and lawyers, they see that nothing happened to the last guy. I think they're more than willing to do it again. I don't see anything holding them back. I really can't.
Well, you know, the main thing that holds them back is our system of democracy that says we don't want to live in a country that lets guys like this run things.
Well, yes, we do. We did turn them out with an election, but I think in some cases we've been damaged so badly. I mean, you know, you think about anybody. Someone brought up the case today about the lady, and all of a sudden I've forgotten her name. The lady in Iran right now that they're holding.
Oh, Sabari, yeah.
Yeah, if they started waterboarding her, what would be the feeling of the people of this country?
I think that they would be outraged, and rightly so. And that's as good a justification why we shouldn't let it happen in this country. You know, if you are going to be outraged that an American citizen is waterboarded or tortured in another country, that's how you should reflect and want to conduct your own internal affairs. This gets back to, think about Harry Truman, for example, in his second inaugural address, talked about the fact that we had to improve race relations and segregation within the United States because the Soviet, one of the reasons, obviously there are very many more than what I'm about to mention, but because he knew that the Soviet Union was using that as propaganda against us, saying America is such, you know, purports itself to be this perfect country where everyone has equal say and it's a perfect democracy, yet they do things like make African Americans ride in the back of the bus. You know, and that contradiction was being exploited against the United States. This is where we are today with this issue. You know, we cannot be, throw stones at an Iran for doing something like this. Not that they have, not that we know that they have, but as an example, if we don't hold ourselves to the highest possible standard on issues like this.
Well, that makes my point that I think we ought to prosecute them to show the rest of the world that we are serious. And unless we hold people's feet to the fire and make them obey the laws, not just our laws, but international laws when it comes to things like this, that they will be free to do it again, and no one will ever believe it. We'll never have credibility in this country again. I don't think morality can be replaced with politics, and that's kind of...
Well, don't sell short the court of public opinion either on this. You know, and I'm not 100%, frankly, to be very honest, I'm not 100% convinced of the, of the infallibility of my position on this. That's just kind of, having thought about it a fair amount, I would tend to draw the line at this point. If somebody, you know, if you or others can make a very compelling case to why the prosecution should go ahead, you know, I'm sympathetic to engage in that discussion. But at this point, I kind of feel like the court of public opinion and the democratic process of having an election every 2 and 4 years is pretty damning evidence that we're willing to correct our past mistakes.
And if actual lawbreaking did take place,
if there are crimes that have been committed, and if a prosecution can first make the case in public and then later in a court of law that there were actual crimes committed in terms of breaking the law, not just interpreting the law badly and stupidly, then that's where I think the distinction between your position and mine is.
And the international community, if they decide, some legal bodies outside of this country decide that the laws have been broken, should we respect that?
Well, this gets into a whole bunch of thorny issues because, as you probably know, the United States is not a signatory to the International Criminal Court in The Hague, and so we are not we're not going to be extraditing any of our government figures anytime soon to them. This is an American issue. This is something that we should handle at home. This is cleaning house. This is deciding where we stand and how we're going to conduct ourselves. I don't think the international community should necessarily have jurisdiction over an issue like this.
Okay. Well, I've seen some of the absurdities of all this. I heard Senator Enzen the other day saying that how this was safe, what they did. They had medical personnel on present. Dr. Mengele had physicians in attendance when he was doing
this. Attempts like that to justify the use of torture really misses the whole point of the debate. The debate is that we don't inflict pain in any combination with any amount of doctors present under any circumstances to those in our captivity. We treat them with respect just like we would an American citizen, and we engage in rigorous cross-examination which does not involve physically or mentally abusing them or subjecting them to any amount of undue stress. I mean, that's where the debate, to stand back and say, well, we had doctors present in the room and we know that they weren't going to die and we only did certain combinations of things is just blatantly misses the point of the argument and I think is a roundabout justification, extraordinarily poor justification for an abhorrent practice.
Well, you and I are going to end this today disagreeing on whether or not we should prosecute people. I would not for political means. I would be all for this as far as justice is concerned. I would like to see if there's any lawbreakers here, and if they are, I would like to see them prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law, not just for now, but for on down the line. Jim, you have a blog of your own, don't you?
I do. It's called allourmight.com, allourmight. I write a lot about these kind of issues, national security, and how progressives and national security intertwines, and how I think Obama has done much more than any Democratic president or progressive president since 1968 to really recapture this mantle of being strong on national security for his party and the entire movement.
And you are also the director of the Progressive Policy Institute.
Well, I'm the director of the National Security Project at the Progressive Policy Institute. Right. My boss would not be happy if I suddenly became the president of the whole thing. So, just to conclude, I want to point out that our disagreement over whether we should prosecute these guys is really the last 2% of this argument. I think that the main point that we fundamentally agree on is this is an un-American practice, and those that view it as a way to gain intelligence are essentially being very unpatriotic and un-American in the way they choose to comport themselves.
Well, I hope it hadn't hurt us too bad internationally. I feel it has, and I think it will continue.
Oh, I think it's certainly damaged. Yeah, I think it has undoubtedly damaged our position in the world, and I think that a public airing and public debate and discussion like we're having right now on forums like your program are the way that we rectify the sins of the past.
Jim, thanks so much for being on the program. Jim Marcatus, who's the director for the Progressive Policy Institute National Security Project. And I want to thank you. And also be sure and visit his blog, allourmight.com. Jim, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yes. Bye now. Well, going to have to agree to disagree on that. I, as you know, would hang Dick Cheney from the yard arms. I think the rest of the nation, the rest of the world in particular, will never trust us again. Just will never trust us again until we bring these people to justice for breaking the law. And I feel they have broken the law. And I personally have satisfied that there's enough evidence that they've broken the law insofar as Dick Cheney and Condoleezza Rice and Bybee and some others involved in this. I think they have broken the law. And so we shall see. There's a man there that has been deeply involved in the intelligence community in the Middle East, threat analysis. He does that sort of thing. Did that on Islamic extremism and all that. Knows a lot about the subject, but we're going to, like he said, I think we're going to disagree on the last 2% of that. I would go full speed ahead with prosecutions on this. We are going to head into the news here. We will be back in just a couple of minutes, so don't go away.
The United Auto Workers Union says no agreement has been reached yet with Chrysler despite some media reports to the contrary. UAW President Ron Gettelfinger says talks with Chrysler and Fiat are ongoing. Issues include retiree health care funding and labor costs as Chrysler scrambles to avoid bankruptcy by possibly merging with Fiat. Half of all U.S. workers have no paid sick days. In California, unions are supporting a mandatory paid sick day law. Jeremy Smith is legislative advocate for the California Labor Federation.
There are workers that wake up every day when they're sick and have to ask themselves, do I go to work sick or do I stay home and lose my job? Or do I stay home and lose a day's pay? And oftentimes they decide to go to work sick because they can't afford to lose their job, especially in this economy, and they can't afford to lose a day's pay.
The California Mandatory Paid Sick Day bill got a hearing in the State Assembly on Wednesday. It faces strong business opposition. Smith says passing this mandatory paid sick day law does have a price tag, but he says there are costs to forcing workers to go without paid sick days, too.
We believe that there are costs associated with not having paid sick days, costs to employers when they don't give their workers paid sick days or the ability to take time off when they're sick. Workers can work sick. They infect coworkers. They, unfortunately, aren't at 100%, so they can't do their work at 100%.
Missouri has been hit with a lawsuit by the union representing prison workers. Jesse Russell reports.
The Missouri Corrections Officer Association filed a lawsuit on Tuesday alleging the corrections department deceptively made workers take compensatory time off to avoid paying overtime. According to the union, corrections workers were forced to take time off with less than 4 days' notice, so workers wouldn't go over 40 hours in a week. The department would schedule officers to work long shifts, followed by abruptly cutting hours later in the week. This isn't the first time the state has been hit with a suit over questionable pay practices. Parole workers won a suit in 2005 when they charged the state with failing to provide raises.
Like many school districts around the country, Lansing, Michigan is feeling the recession in the classroom. This week, the school administration will begin sending out layoff notices to 170 faculty members, including 110 teachers. In addition to a budget deficit that could reach $16 million, the school anticipates a loss of nearly 1,000 students. The loss in students correlates to families leaving the region as they lose their jobs or find themselves faced with home foreclosures.
Here's today's economic report. Does the world feel like it's getting smaller? It could just be the economy. According to the International Monetary Fund, the world economy could shrink by 1.3% this year, making it the first time in 60 years the world economy has gone in reverse. If it does shrink, leading economists believe that could lead to 10 million more without jobs. On Friday, world economic powers will meet to further develop commitments recently made at the World Summit in London in March.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year. And a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run with those scissors,
it's the least you can do.
Throw the third switch! Throw the third switch! The third switch!
So this is good. I'm going to get a positive.
Next question. Following this. You can count down. Six. Five. Four. Three. Two.
Is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody. Yes, you are listening to the Guy James Show, and I thank you for joining us today here on this beautiful Southwest Florida day. I hope it's nice where you are as well. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to call us. 866-546-5254. 54 if you'd like to join us here on the Guy James Show today. We'd appreciate having you call in, as always. I don't agree that we shouldn't prosecute these people, and I don't know. You know how lawyers are. They're going to nitpick this thing to death. But we find that looking back that Condoleezza Rice was involved, that Rumsfeld was involved. I'm saying this, and I am certainly not a lawyer. I'm just saying that anybody involved in okaying this decision is just dead wrong. Just absolutely dead wrong that it was an immoral act. It wasn't the act that Americans would expect to be okayed by a people in our government, and if they are found to have violated the law in any respect whatsoever along these lines in this torture policy, I say they should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. That's exactly where I stand on it, and that's what I would like to see. Whether or not that will happen, well, that's a question that we just probably won't find out for a long time, if ever. What really disappoints me about this, a lot of it is, what do they have on Nancy Pelosi? Have you noticed the silence coming from the Speaker's office on this issue? We know that the Speaker sat in on discussions about this, and I didn't hear any big outrage over it, did you? I remember Governor Rockefeller saying he took, notes and put them in his safe, but I don't think there was any huge outrage over this. I don't know. It really bothers me, and I know it bothers many of you too. Many of my listeners, what do you think? Are you and I farther to the left than a lot of these people? Are we looking at this maybe prejudice politically? I don't think so. I'm trying to look at it as right and wrong. That's all there is to it. It's just right and wrong. And I cannot see how anybody could even consider letting these people go and letting them completely off the hook for all of this. I don't get it. I never will. It's over with. It's all done. Let's look to the future. Like I said, I think I said yesterday, rob the bank. I'm taking to court. I'm putting in jail and go before the judge and say, Judge, that little bank thing, that was a few weeks ago. I won't do it anymore.
I'm really sorry. Let's let bygones be bygones, and let's look forward. How about it, Judge? Is that what you want to do? That's what they're trying to do here. That is what they're trying to do here. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Is this Guy?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Guy. This is Eric Peterson from Vermont. How are you?
Hi, Eric. How are you? How are things in Vermont today?
Oh, we're warming up. We're going to have a beautiful weekend coming here. What am I listening to while I'm listening to you?
I don't know. You hear something else?
Well, you just did the interview with the guy that indicated we should do these crazy things on the chat room. Am I a time warp here? Oh, okay. There we go. I got you, Guy. You're the man. You're the man. Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. It must be my computer glitch or something. I'm not sure. I had big problems with the gentleman that you interviewed, and I'm sure you did, as many other people in this country would have had if they had had the opportunity to have listened to him. He, on many issues, but I'll focus in, first of all, on he calls it an American issue. He must understand that the Geneva Conventions were ratified by the U.S. Congress, and that is a constitutional element of the American issue. So it is not just an American issue. It becomes global in our contract with the ratification of the Geneva Accords within all members of the population of nation states that signed upon those accords. And I really had a very difficult time understanding why he didn't really address the globalization of how horrific these attributes of let's go to the future and not worry about the past. It felt very much to me as though he was being an extreme apologist for whatever actions has been taking place over the last years. Plus, going back into 1947, when Harry Truman developed the CIA within the National Security Act or whatever it was, 1947, and then later regretted that in a op-ed publication of New York Times in 1963, I think it was actually December 22nd, New York Times, it was Section A, page 11, I believe it was, 1 month in 1963 after the JFK assassination, in which Harry Truman had indicated that there was a major flaw in the CIA, that it was theoretically designed by him in his mind, that it should have been an agency that was directly responsible to the President of the United States, as he had not had a great deal of confidence from DOD intelligence, SOS intelligence, or many of the other agencies that would be developing intelligence to present to his office. And I can't believe that this man actually had the audacity to make some of the statements he did on the store. And I appreciate your time.
Well, Eric, we agree on this. I've been kinder and gentler lately on the show, but I'm livid over this situation. I really am, and I cannot understand. I cannot get it in my head that we would not go full bore. I was terribly disappointed. What was it on Monday when President Obama said that, you know, he's pretty much willing just to let this thing go. I've been disappointed with several things that President Obama has done, but I've tried to remain positive and know that most of the things he does I agree with, and some of them I've had vehement disagreement with. But here's a clear case, and I know lawyers would laugh at me for saying that this, but here's a clear case where people have broken the law. This I am sure of. I've heard many lawyers. I have a lot of respect for. You've heard Jonathan Turley, haven't you? Have you not, Professor Jonathan Turley?
Yes,
from George Washington.
Let me talk. Constitutional attorney from George Washington.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Yes. And we've had Jonathan on the show. He knows what went on here. In his opinion, there's a great many illegalities that took place. And a great many of the people in the legal community feel that there a lot of illegalities took place. You can't just, with the whole world looking on, like you just mentioned, you just can't brush it aside. I really think our national prestige is at stake here once again. And I don't understand how anybody can just brush it aside. It baffles me. It really does, and it's very disappointing as well. Where do you think it'll go, Eric? When it all boils down to the bottom.
I don't know where it goes. Actually, I have no idea. I mean, I know far less than you do, other than getting on the net and trying to find as much information as I possibly can, as many of us try to do. The teabagging thing to me is just like an anomaly of, you know, some people that really aren't terribly well informed, and that goes away, in my mind.
Temporarily, at least.
But I am very concerned about these apologists and a lot of the incidents of the mainstream media seems to, I'm diverting here a bit, the mainstream media does seem to be shooting this across the bow a little bit on a national agenda or a national news front. Do you agree with that?
Yes. And when you look into the meat of this story, this is, for the news organizations, this is a great story. And if it ends up with legs and anybody does get prosecuted and there's a big investigation, that'll give these guys news fodder for a long time. So they're going to love this story. There isn't any question about that. They're going to love it. And they are trying to keep it going because I think they do see some credence in a lot of what the people who want to do a prosecution here, you and me and millions of other Americans and some important people, too. Not that we're not important, but I think the news media is not going to give up on it. I think they've got their teeth into it now, and it's a little too late to stop the ball from rolling down the hill.
And with the teabagging party, like I said on the chat room, I mean, I meander around. I mean, the area of Vermont that I live in is a very conservative part of Vermont, although we elect the Bernie Sanders and the Pat Leahy's and so forth. But it is a very conservative part of Vermont. And I can remember last Wednesday, a week and one day ago, that I meandered through there and said, where were you people 8 years ago? You're worried about the Constitution. You got all this propaganda about the Constitution and about the common sense by Thomas Paine and so on and so forth. Where were you guys 8 years ago? Well, I did that in passing, and I didn't really directly confront anybody because there are about 275 of them, and there's one of me. But, pardon me, I just choked on my whatever. The reality is that there are Democrats possibly involved with this as well as Republicans. Would it be your point of view that regardless of which letter that people put after their name, that truth should be found regarding the elements which have occurred in the violation of the American principle of truth, justice, and the American way, and all those little talking points that we used to grow up with 50 years ago? Would you agree that if Jane Harmon has actually done something that is actually criminally prosecutable, that she should go through the course of justice, an investigation, prosecution, if it's justified, as well as anybody else, or Pelosi, or anybody else, regardless of the politics of Democratic or Republican? I get tired of listening left, right. I'm sitting here right now saying this is way beyond left, right, Democratic, Republican. This is the American way.
You're exactly right.
And if it's not the American way, then I want nothing to do with it because I want everybody to be subject to the same rule of law.
Absolutely, Eric. If Jane Harmon, you know, coming at it from my position, if Jane Harmon's involved in what they say she is, she's got any dirt on her from that, from my stance on my political views, I'd come at her harsher, more harsh than I would on people on the other side, because it's the Democrats who have claimed that they're going to bring you know, some honor and dignity back and get rid of all this stuff, but to be involved in it and to know that Pelosi sat in on a meeting like she did and didn't raise a stink about what was going on with this, classified or not, I'm extremely disappointed I'm all for prosecuting any politician. I've always said in kind of a laughing manner, you know, but I'm kind of half serious about it, that they ought to have a gallows outside of the Capitol building, and if a politician's found breaking the law, they ought to hang a couple of them. Maybe that would stop the rest of them. But you know, it's that community, it's that Beltway community that once they get involved.
Beltway community.
Yeah.
White guy. But what happened to all this election reform finance stuff that prevented? Not yet. It hasn't happened yet, but theoretically, it was supposed to have prevented the collusion between a lot of politicians and a lot of policy, whether domestic or foreign policy, based upon the interest of corporate America or whatever other interests. What happened to that election reform process? I get on the block. I hear nothing about it anymore. And these people still get elected because they have to accept money from the corporations, from this group PAC or that group PAC, and so on and so forth. And that really convolutes the American principle of we the people as defined within the Constitution and Declaration of Independence.
Certainly does. Certainly does. As long as we have a system like that, it's going to remain. And you're right. After the election's over with, most of that's pretty much forgotten, because they can't get elected without the money, and they're going to stay after it, and they know where the bread's buttered in that little community. And I've said many times that inside the Beltway, Washington is a small town. It really is. You're talking about a 1,000 or 2,000 people that run that city. The politicians and the lobbyists and all that, maybe a few more than that, but you and I are never going to have a say in what really happens.
No, I don't think we should be that pessimistic. We need to regenerate to the American people, and we've talked about this many times in the past, Mr. James, but we do have to generate and keep talking about it, no matter how...
But we're saying we just did that. We just did that in November.
We didn't just do that.
Well, we thought we did.
We did that in November.
We thought
we
did.
No, we didn't. And that was my problem with your guest, because he said, well, gee, you just had an election, blah, blah, blah. And he was resorting to politics rather than the morality and the ethics of what the issue was in conjunction with the Geneva Conventions, the Japanese prosecutions after World War II. He was doing his little lawyer nonsense thing, and you're right. But the fact of the matter, he didn't really address what the rule of law is in terms of constitutionally. He said it's an American thing. It's not an American thing. And I guess I'm kind of upset right now, Guy, and I apologize because you're the best. But the fact of the matter is that guy was a real boob tube to me.
Well, I know that people are going to look at it that way. I do vehemently disagree with him. I do. I don't see how you couldn't want to prosecute these people. I don't. And you know, they're going to look at you and me and a lot of people that are in our audience, people in the chat room right now and others, and seem like we're a lot more serious today than we were yesterday. Anyway,
well, I have many other issues that I'm going through, and we can't discuss those because
But it just, people are, look at us in a way, these moderates. I'm moderate about some things, but these people that are all moderate.
I'm getting tired. The moderate, left, right, liberal. Liberal, dude, every time I listen to Fox News, well, he's a liberal. He's left. Or you get on, you know, some other show on the left and say, well, he's a conservative. He's a neocon. When are we going to start talking about issues? When are we going to start talking really about the Constitution? When are we going to start talking about manifest destiny, continentalism, and all the good Christians that stole the land, considered massacres over the Indians during that period of time to get the history books correct? And then we can come up to the history point that we have now in 2009, April 23rd. And then we can start dealing with how we go in the future. Until we actually recognize and understand what our history has been, we will never be able to reconcile that to go into the future. And I'm hoping that Eric Holder is very, very serious about whatever reported differences there may have been with the administration. And you know as well as I did, I went out on the streets to support Obama, and I still support Obama, and I'm sure that there are a lot of things that I don't know behind the scenes, beyond my imagination. And I hope we're all together this time. I apologize if I offended you in any way.
Well, I'm tired of hearing that one from the politicians that well, you know, you don't know all the facts like we do. And I'm really tired of hearing that one from them, because I think a lot of us do know the facts just like they do. And Eric Holder... It seems to me that the president put Eric Holder in a tough position, because he definitely served the ball over to him in his court, and where does Holder go with it now? Knowing what the president said on Monday about, well, we're just not going to do anything, and then the pressure was put on the president, and he heard us. I mean, there's no question, he's heard us. And now, I'm going to let my attorney general take care of this. Holder's got a lot of pressure on him right now, and I hope he's and I believe he is man enough to handle that pressure, and I'm hoping he will. I really am hoping he will, but I just hope he doesn't get slapped down by anybody and start putting the heat on him. Just, hey, leave this alone. But that little community that we talk about,
there are a lot of little caveats in there, and you don't know how stealth Obama's going in here, how much knowledge he has, how much whatever his campaign promises were to do this, that, and the other thing, are very much in knowledge of the perhaps Ethel Kennedy saying the torch is being passed on to you, and I'm not sure that's an accurate quote during the Coretta Scott King ceremony when she passed on. But I mean, I can see that maybe, yeah, this stuff has been going on for a lot of time, and there's a lot of infiltration with our whole government organization and every agency, you name it, where these people are that really want to go in a wrong direction rather than forward regarding what is constitutional, what is not constitutional. But then again, that's just my perspective. Listen, Guy, I don't want to waste your time. I'm sorry.
Waste your time. Nobody calls.
I was really ticked off at that guy. I'm sorry, but I was just...
Gee, I couldn't tell.
You couldn't tell.
Thank you for being on the line.
I really appreciate you always being there. I know I don't get on as much as I should. As you know, personally, I do have some other issues.
Yes. Well, don't ever say you've wasted time, because myself and our audience loves to hear from you, Eric. Thanks so much for calling.
You thank yourself very much for being online, and I hope your wife is doing great.
Good.
Send me a PM on that.
Doing well. I will. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye.
Well, a lot of people are terribly upset that there's a somewhat moderate view around about some of this stuff, about this prosecution, or lack thereof. And you know how I feel about it, and I know how a lot of you feel about it. We're going to pause for a break, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Remember when the days are long, the golden years. even poison bodies for me to taste. Draw dwell on small details that had to fly. Oh, well, I'm a place where we can love, still untouched by me. Oh, we could sit and watch the clouds go by, tall grass blazing wind.
The white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand. Isn't how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Yes, and how many years can a mountain exist before it is washed to the sea? Yes, and how many years can some people exist before they're allowed to be free? Yes, and how many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Yes, and how many times must a man look up before he can see the sky? Yes, and how many ears must one man have before he can hear people cry? Yes, and how many deaths will it take till he knows that too many people have died? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Ah, yes, blowing in the wind, just like this issue that we've been talking about today, blowing in the wind. We don't know where it's going to go. We do know this. We do know that, as I mentioned before in our conversation with Eric, it is a small community in Washington, D.C., and it's damn hard to prosecute anybody in Washington, D.C. They've made sure of it. They've insulated themselves from justice many, many times, and it doesn't matter whether you're a Democrat or a Republican or libertarian or what you are. They have made the laws so that they are protected. I think the laws should be more strict, and I know this flies in the face of you know, we're all equal and all that, but I think in the case of a politician who has the public trust, who got our votes, got our money, and is in charge of making the laws and enforcing them, I think that they should be held to a higher standard, and it seems to me they're held to a much lower standard than the average guy on the street, and that's something that is always, it's always got my back up, I can tell you that, over the years. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to join us on the program, we've got the line open right now. So how effective has this torture been? We've had one lie after another, one big prevarication, one big stretching of the truth after another over the years. The past few years about how the Bush administration saved us from this and saved us from that. And we had, what was it, the Miami Six and the guys up at the Army base, the pizza delivery guys, and, one massive terrorist cell after another to hear them talk about it, how they've saved us. And now they're talking about this library tower in California that they're going to save it. You know, they were going to blow that up. All this is conjecture. None of it's been proven. Most of these cases have turned out to be nothing but fluff. And we are to believe, you and I, to sit here today and believe that this torture was a good thing for America, to hear Dick Cheney tell it. Oh, Dick Cheney. I had hoped that they would go away and I wouldn't see any of them anymore. But Cheney's face isn't something that for almost all of his eight-year tenure as the Vice President of the United States, he was at an undisclosed location or stayed out of the news as much as he could. This clandestine-type Vice President stayed in his cave and didn't want anybody to know his whereabouts and just kept his mouth shut and directed the administration from behind the scenes, and now that he's out of office, the bastard is everywhere. He's everywhere. I sure loved it yesterday when Hillary Clinton was asked something about the vice president saying that these practices were, you know, helped us. And she said, well, I don't consider the vice president a credible source of information. Ha! I loved it. It was a great line, and it was absolutely true. He is not a credible source of information of any kind, one of the most loathsome people in the history of this nation. And that Dana Rohrabacher, he tried to nail Hillary Clinton yesterday. He just made an ass out of himself. Dana Rohrabacher is an ass. Another one of those people, you see him go to Congress and you wonder, what the hell is wrong with the people in his district? What is wrong? There are many people like that. And, you know, really and truly, it's got nothing to do with partisan politics. I wouldn't care if what these guys were politically. You look at some of these politicians and you go, what is wrong with the people that elected these guys? There's been Democrats that I wondered that about, too. Let's be honest here. Not all the Democrats are great people. Maybe a slightly bigger percentage than Republicans. and I did want to mention yesterday that during the show, and I didn't have a chance to answer it, we were having so much fun yesterday talking about animal life in Florida that I got this email from Johnny O. And, you know, when we were talking about the the squeavers, I love that. Bedtime for Bonzo isn't here today. Squeavers. I've been trying to think some of those other animal matchups like that that we could come up with, but none quite as clever as that one, squeavers. For those of you that weren't here yesterday, they were talking about mating where he lived. A squirrel and the beavers mated, and they called it a squeaver. But and so I started talking about all the animal life that we had around here where I live. And so Johnny O sends me an email. It says that we also had fox here. I didn't know we had fox here. And hyenas. Johnny O, is that true? Do we really have hyenas here besides some of the people I know around here that are kind of like hyenas? God, I didn't know that. And also I should have mentioned that we have wolves. We've had some coyotes and wolf types here lately that have been getting people's dogs. And by the way, I did see the little gator today. He's just a little guy. He's only probably 3 feet long, soaking wet. All sorts of things. But Johnny O has got to let me know if that's for real about the hyenas, because I've not seen one. Now, I did see an armadillo along the road today. He didn't look too good. He'd had a rough day. In fact, it looked like he had a run-in with a Buick, so he was just kind of laying there. You didn't need to hear that, did you? 866-546-5254, if you want to use up some of those free minutes you got, 304-574-7813, 7814 or 7815, and we have lines open right at the moment. Hey, and listen, if you do call with this new system we've got, you may be put on hold and you won't hear anything. If it's picked up and you don't hear anything, you've been put on hold, so just hang on, okay? We've got the three lines here, and I must admit I'm not that good with this new phone yet. There's some things I haven't figured out, that's for sure. So how well has all this torture actually worked? We have a bomb go off in Iraq today. At least 70 people were killed. Two suicide bomb attacks. Can you imagine 70 people being killed in this country? Can you imagine that, what the news would be? And everybody looks at this like, ho-hum. Then the worst strike over there. There were 45 people killed, including several Iranian pilgrims. They were killed when a suicide bomber struck a restaurant in a town northeast of Baghdad. And another 28 people, including children, of course, were killed in a suicide attack on a police patrol in southeastern Baghdad. The bloodshed was unleashed as the Iraq military announced the arrest of one of the country's most wanted men. Here we go again. The head of the Iraqi wing of Al-Qaeda, which calls itself the Islamic State of Iraq. How many times have they caught that guy? How many? I don't know. They always get in one of the underlings, never get the top guy. And they also said another 55 people were wounded in the attack on the restaurant. It was a horrible scene. Saw some pictures of it earlier. The Iranian people were on their way to the Shiite holy city of Karbala, which is south of Baghdad. The awful carnage that has taken place in that country, I don't know how the people there sleep at night. I really don't. What an awful thing to be burned in the mind forever of young people there seeing that. What an awful thing to do. Our guest mentioned this article in the New York Times today by Ali Sufan. It's called My Tortured Decision. And he said in the article, he said, it is inaccurate, however, to say that Abu Zubaydah had been uncooperative all along. Along with another FBI agent and with several CIA officers present, this is the author of this, questioned him from March to June 2002 before the harsh techniques were introduced later in August. And under traditional interrogation methods, he provided us with important, actionable intelligence. But then you see, this is when
The administration started to be desperate about finding a rationalization for this war, trying to prove to the American people they had an actual reason to go to the war. And they wanted him to say, no matter what, that they had weapons of mass destruction over there. That's what they were out to get a confession of, and they were going to do anything they had to do to him to get him to say that. And that's when all this started. I don't know. Sometimes wonder if the administration we just got rid of isn't as bad as some of the people they were fighting. Waterboarding somebody 266 times, two guys 266 times. You're damn right, they said some things that were probably untrue. Who wouldn't? I'd tell them anything they wanted to hear. We've heard that story from John McCain. John McCain was broken by the Vietnamese and told them a lot of things that he thought they wanted to hear. Didn't necessarily give them everything they wanted to know. You know, and we have the FBI director, Robert Mueller, told Vanity Fair last year that he did not believe that there had been a case where any attacks had been disrupted because of intelligence obtained through these coercive methods. And they asked him again about that on Tuesday. And he said the quote's accurate. I don't know. Who do you believe? Mueller or do you believe Dick Cheney? I know who I put my money on. That's for certain. Well, we'll be back after a short break, so don't go away.
Some people stay far away from the door if there's a chance of it opening up. They hear a voice in the hall outside and hope that it just passes by. Some people live with the fear of a touch and the anger of having been a fool. They will not listen to anyone, so nobody tells them a lie. Making up for the love you've been denying you could ever feel. I'm not above doing anything to restore your faith if I can. Some people see through the eyes of the old before they ever get a look at the young. I'm only willing to hear you cry because I am an innocent man. I am an innocent man. Oh, yes, I am. Some people say they will never believe another promise they hear in the dark, because they only remember too well they heard somebody tell them before. Some people sleep all alone every night instead of taking a lover to bed. Some people find that it's easier to hate than to wait anymore. I know you don't want to hear what I say.
keep you alive. I'm not above going through it again. I'm not above being cool for a while. If you're cruel to me, I understand. Some people run from a possible fight. Some people figure they can never win.
Welcome back to the Guy James Show. You know, I was just I was looking at some notes I had here, and it's hard to believe. you read some of these figures, you see, and I'm one that loves numbers, and of course I'll set out to, when I read something this wild and crazy, I'll say, well, that's not true, and I'll set out to figure out whether it is or not. And this one I did. There's a great website called TooMuchOnline.org. TooMuchOnline.org. I think you'll enjoy this website. It calls itself an online weekly on excess and inequality. That's TooMuchOnline.org. And there's a story this week about a gentleman named Fernando Garcia. He works for the Northwest Arkansas Workers' Justice Center. And these days he doesn't see a whole lot of justice. In this labor organizer's neck of the global woods, retail giant Walmart looms large and casts an incredibly dark shadow. And quoting him, he said, a Walmart worker, Garcia noted last week, a Walmart worker has to work roughly 1,646 years. Let me repeat that, 1,646 years to make the same amount of what former CEO Lee Scott of Walmart would make in a year. 16.5 centuries. The average Walmart worker has to work to make what the CEO made. Tell me there's not something crazy about that. I don't care what the circumstance, I don't care stock options, I don't care what you can say about that. There is no way in the world, no way in the world that you can justify this. Not a chance that you, there's no scenario in which you can justify that right there. And for somebody, Texas Bessie, asking about the link for that, I'm going to put that on the chat room right now. You just have to think about that. 16.5 centuries to make as much as the big boss does. Man. It's absurd. It sounds absolutely absurd. That's the April 20th issue of Too Much, the online weekly on excess and inequality. You'll enjoy that website, or, well, maybe not. You read a few things like that and you want to start throwing things. I know I do. They have some America's Most Puzzling Inequality stat. The United States has regularly been counting people via census since 1790, but the federal government didn't start counting the dollars in people's pockets with any regularity until 1983. Well, that's not such a big deal. Now, Johnny O just said something on the chat room that's funny. The hyena in Lee County, Florida, is that morning radio show host Mandy Connell. Amen, brother. My apologies to the hyenas. Definitely my apologies to the hyenas. A loathsome character, to be sure. I don't know how, a guy like, the CEO of these big companies, I don't know how they can look at any of their workers in the face, knowing about the money that they make and the money that the workers make and knowing that, he's done everything he can to keep their workers' pay and their benefits down. Hey, I do want to mention to the local folks here, the
Democratic Club, Women's Club of Collier County, Florida. That's Naples. They're having a big fashion show coming up Saturday. And you can, I guess you can, I don't have their website here, but it's the Lee County Democratic Women's Club. And they're having a big fashion show this coming Saturday. And yours truly, they're having a dinner and a silent auction and all that. Yours truly is going to be there to open the festivities with a song. I think we're going to do America the Beautiful. So I particularly like that song. Going to do that in place of the Star-Spangled Banner. So I'm looking forward to that. It's always a fine group, and they're going to that's their money raiser for the year, try and raise money for their Women's Democratic Club, and they've invited me to come down and sing, so I'm going to do it, and I am looking forward to that. I know some of the gals from the club are listening right now, and I look forward to seeing you all on Saturday, and we'll try and get tuned up for that. Me. Yes, I think it'll work. I do want to mention once again, I mentioned starting off the program today that Bob Kincaid and I will be attending the AmericaFuture.org convention in Washington, D.C. on June 1st through June 3rd, and we'll be each doing our shows from there and possibly appearing on each other's shows. I was asked about that today. You can look that up at ourfuture.org. If you're in the area someplace of Washington, D.C., you might want to attend that. It's a great conference. They have lots of wonderful guests and speakers and many, many seminars to go to. It's an exciting time. It's always well attended, and they get the very best speakers. They get the cream of the crop to come in for that one. So I am looking forward to that as always. Oh, they want me to record the song for the show. Well, okay, or else I'll just sing it live here. You know, that's one thing you have to admit. You don't have many talk shows where the host is dumb enough to get on and sing a song like I've done a couple of times. That's for sure. Hey, listen, I've enjoyed the show today. I know most of you didn't agree with my guest. I didn't either, but we were gentlemanly about it. And we look forward to having a couple of great guests on next week that I'm working on for various issues. And I know this torture issue will still be around next week. And we've got to get serious about talking about some things on these bank bailouts. There's a lot to talk about on that as well. Stay tuned for the Mark Levine Show coming up next, and Bob after that. And you can just spend the whole evening here on the Head On Radio Network. This is the Head On Radio Network. This is the Guy James Show. And always remember that you've heard from the radical right. You have. You've heard plenty from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Later, gang.
Your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Monday, April 20th, 2009. is a date that is a strange mixture of three very different things that have, well, come together as one. The first, of course, is that April 20th is Yom HaShoah. It is the day in the Hebrew calendar, Nisan, the 27th of Nisan, that remembers, commemorates the victims of the Holocaust. April 20th is also Hitler's birthday, a date celebrated by neo-Nazis worldwide who want to finish what Hitler did not complete. Hitler only killed one-third of every Jew, of all the Jews in the world. And those that celebrate Hitler's birthday obviously want to kill the remaining two-thirds. Monday, April 20th, was also the opening day of the Human Rights Conference, specifically the UN Conference Against Racism in Geneva, Switzerland, that has been called Durban 2 because of the first UN Conference on Racism that occurred in 2001. That conference famously devolved into one of the most